are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Friday, everybody. Hopefully you've had a fantastic week so far. We're looking forward to an exciting weekend. Today's episode is brought to you once again by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes exactly like a candy bar. Go to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order. Today, we're going to continue the time machine. We talked about the year 1990 earlier this week, the year 2000 yesterday. Today, we're going to talk about the year 2010, going decade by decade. Next week, we'll hit those intermediate years, 95, 05, and 2015. Unfortunately, I think that this conversation, 2010, will be the most depressing for Timberwolves fans related to the era that was smack dab in the middle of. But a little bit of kind of gross nostalgia, I guess, if there's such a thing, because I remember this era very, very well, and everybody could tell it was a train wreck throughout as it was happening. So anyways, we'll talk about that here in a minute. Off the top, we'll talk about some quick NBA notes, then we'll get into the year 2010. First, though, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right, NBA-related news. There was some discussion yesterday. There was a good summary on hoopsrumors.com, which is a must-stop every morning for everyone, or actually really throughout the day, as they aggregate all the news around the NBA and the basketball world in general. There were quite a few notes aggregated about the potential for different approaches to the rest of the season, different things that are being proposed by teams, by the league as a whole. ESPN Zach Lowe had posted various playoff formats, considering different play-in tournaments, et cetera. There's some chatter that one of the main reasons that there are some teams and some around the league that really want to include more than just 16 teams is because the New Orleans Pelicans are currently just outside the playoff picture in the West, and Zion Williamson was, for the second part of this season, must-see TV. And so no doubt the league would love to get him on TV and give the Pelicans a chance. So there's that conversation. There's also, of course, many teams, especially those that are already in the top 16 that would be in the playoffs if they started today, that just simply want to play the playoffs. There's also Danny LaRoe at The Athletic is arguing that the NBA's best teams should get to pick their playoff opponents, which is something that I know has been talked about in some of the more outlandish possibilities. I think Bill Simmons has brought that up in the past over at The Ringer, and just kind of the whole, you know, the challenge aspect of it, like, hey, they picked us because they wanted to play us because they don't think we're good. So of course there's going to be some added incentive. I think that would be a really interesting dynamic to any of the big four or big five sports leagues here in the United States. I think that would be a really interesting twist, and I'm not sure how well received it would be by the players or coaches especially, but that's a thought. And then Mark Berman at the New York Post brought up a good point. If the league does bring all 30 teams back and tries to get to that 70-game threshold that we talked about previously many times on Locked On Wolves, if you missed it, basically for each team to get the regional television revenue sharing, they've got to play at least 70 games. The Timberwolves, for instance, have played 64, so they'd need to come back and play six more to get that revenue share or for that to kick in. But obviously, if the Timberwolves came back, they'd be leery of playing Karl Anthony Towns, who just recovered from a wrist fracture, and what's the point? They can't make the playoffs. Even if they win all six games, they're not going to make the playoffs. They'd also lose their lottery position, etc. And Damian Lillard's already said if the Trailblazers don't have a chance of making the playoffs, he's not going to play when the season resumes. So Berman's point is the league should freeze the draft lottery order based on current standings to avoid a potential tank fest, in his words, which is fair. And I'm sure that there would still be teams that would do it because the Wolves would, for instance, maybe they just want to keep Towns off the court. Then again, I guess on the other hand, a broken wrist is either healed or it's not in most cases. And so if you can play Towns with D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley for six more games and decide, you know, what does this fit look like? What do we know? What did we not know until we did this? You know, that could help inform the decision on Malik Beasley this offseason in restricted free agency as well. So there's a number of things there as well to consider. Who knows what's going to happen? It does look like the Bucks co-owner Mark Lazary came out just the other day, and on Thursday actually, so just yesterday, and said that he believes there will be a vote early next week on a potential NBA return. There was also something that just came out from Keith Pompey this morning at the Philadelphia Inquirer. Keith Pompey is also a Locked On host, the host of Locked On Sixers, actually. And he noted that the NBA is considering the possibility of an NBA free agency period that would come before the NBA draft, which of course would drastically change how teams operate and would really upset the apple cart from what teams are used to doing. So that would be, and who knows, maybe that's just one of the scenarios being kind of bandied about, and it's likely not one of the more likely ones, but it's certainly notable to consider that something that drastic could still happen yet in the next few weeks. All right, before we move into talking about 2010, I did want to mention the article that Adrian Wojnarowski posted about the Minnesota Timberwolves during the day on Thursday. It's regarding the tragic death of George Floyd, the man who died in police custody earlier this week. Recording this Friday morning, there obviously was a lot of protests, many peaceful protests, many also more criminal activities that happened Thursday night and Friday night in the streets of Minneapolis and St. Paul and other cities around the country. So not wanting to get too much into that, of course, but at the same time, I think notable that Woj put out this article about how the Minnesota Timberwolves are handling specifically the tragic death of Floyd, which I think we can all agree was absolutely tragic and unnecessary. And not specific to the riots and the protests that are happening in Minneapolis and beyond. This was, again, posted Thursday. I think a lot of the interviews were done with some of the Wolves staff late Wednesday, so kind of as some of that stuff was starting. So that's not really referenced in this article, but it's all about how Ryan Saunders and Gerson Rosas are doing their best to connect with players and help them wherever the players would like to get involved and make a difference. Malik Beasley is quoted in this article as talking about wanting to make a difference as much as possible. Ryan Saunders recognizes, this is a quote from Saunders. He says, quote, "I'm a white male in a position of leadership. I don't take lightly the fact that I have not experienced some of these things that our individual guys have had to experience," end quote. He goes on to talk about how basically elaborate on, he understands that he's been in a different position than many of his players and continues to be in a different position, and wants to connect with them. And Beasley has a quote about how genuine Saunders is. And clearly this is something that weighs heavy on Saunders' heart. He wanted to talk to the team directly via a Zoom call. And also Rosas, they've been having these weekly speakers to the team, and had recently, they've had several different players or several different folks speak. According to Woj, they've had JJ Watt. We've seen they've had Bob Iger, the former CEO of Disney. It's noted in here that Rosas got True Pettigrew to speak this week, who he is, according to Woj, an expert in the area of connecting communities with police. Rosas said, quote, "He gave us the ability to verbalize our feelings, address them, and figure out a way to move forward." So interesting article from Woj. Great to see the Timberwolves being proactive with this and trying as best they can to engage their team, which of course is, the roster is overwhelmingly African-American, and try and connect them to Minneapolis, try and connect them to the community, help the players do what they can to put a stop to everything that's been going on. Kudos to Saunders and Rosas for doing that. Obviously it's a very difficult situation all the way around. So if you get a chance, go read that article from Woj and check out what Saunders and Rosas and Beasley and those guys all had to say. All right, next we are going to get into the 2010 year overall. We're going to talk fun facts from 2010 as a whole in pop culture, etc., and then also Minnesota Timberwolves specific. Before we do that, let's talk again about Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever, hands down. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. I talked about this yesterday. I was looking forward to it, and I was not disappointed. The chocolate toffee almond was amazing. My wife put one of the peanut butter flavors, and I can't remember which one, in the fridge and tried it. I don't know if this is recommended by the good folks at Built Bar or not, but she did it and said it was also amazing. I know a lot of people will freeze or refrigerate candy bars, and I've been saying all along, Built Bar tastes just like a candy bar. And apparently refrigerating it makes it taste awesome too. So there you go. Try your Built Bar refrigerated or not refrigerated. Again, Built Bar is a protein bar. Like I said, tastes exactly like a candy bar. There's 16 amazing flavors. So far, the chocolate toffee almond and the chocolate coconut almond are my two favorites. There are 16 total amazing flavors, 8 chocolate nut flavors, 8 chocolate nut-free flavors. All the bars are covered in 100% chocolate and are soft and easy to chew. Built Bar is perfect for the health-conscious guy or gal. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are all low-calorie, they're all low-sugar, high-protein, and high fiber. The flavor profile on the peanut butter brownie is 20 grams protein, 170 calories, only 3 grams of sugar, and just 3 grams of net carbs. That's the peanut butter brownie flavor. Go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your first order. That's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order at BuiltBar.com. Okay, it's the year 2010. It was only exactly 10 years ago that we were smack dab in the middle of the year 2010. What do you remember about that year? That was the first year that Amazon announced that it was selling more Kindle books than hardcover ones, which surprised me. That's a little earlier than I would have thought. It's also the year that the original Yankee Stadium that was opened in April of 1923 was demolished, or the demolition was completed. Of course, the Yankees started playing in New Yankee Stadium just prior to that. The most popular movie of the year was Toy Story 3. Of course, Toy Story 4 just came out last year, so there were 9 years in between Toy Story 3 and 4. The Girl Who Kicks the Hornet's Nest was the best-selling book on Amazon. American Idol on Fox at the time was the top TV show. The Best Picture, Oscar for Best Picture, was The Hurt Locker. Good movie. Modern Family on ABC won an Emmy for Outstanding Comedy Series. In terms of sports, the New Orleans Saints won the Super Bowl that year. It was that was the onside kick year to beat the Colts, where they did the onside kick after halftime. Also the year they beat the Minnesota Vikings in the NFC Championship game, actually, on the Brett Favre interception. The San Francisco Giants won the World Series. The Chicago Blackhawks clinched the Stanley Cup that year. And this was the second of the back-to-back championships won by the Kobe Bryant Pau Gasol Los Angeles Lakers under Phil Jackson. So this was also the second to last year that Phil Jackson coached. The Lakers had lost in the finals in 2008 with Kobe. Then in 2009, they won the finals with Kobe and Pau Gasol, won the finals again in 2010 after winning 57 games the regular season. Phil Jackson's final year was the next year. They won 57 games again, but lost in the conference semifinals. Of course, then after Phil left, Pau and Kobe still had a couple more years run at it, but they did not do as well with Mike Brown as head coach, as it turns out. At any rate, the Lakers were the NBA champions that year in 2010. And I guess one final fun fact, a gallon of milk costs $3.32. I guess that varies a little bit based on where you live. Here, that would still be fairly expensive where I live in Oklahoma City. But it may not be that bad elsewhere. I'm not really sure. Apparently, that's one of those things that varies by region quite a bit. And also now, it turns out in a pandemic, those things vary quite a bit as well, because you get one brand of milk for $3 and one for $4. But anyways, I digress. So let's talk about 2010. The Timberwolves, this was right in the middle of the David Kahn and Kurt Rambis era. Not fun. David Kahn was hired in May of 2009. So we don't need to talk about the infamous 2009 draft, because it happened in 2009, of course, but that was just a month after David Kahn was hired. And thankfully that didn't happen in 2010, so we can skip over that. But of course, the 2009 draft had massive implications on that season. And then, really the next several seasons. We talked about this at length in the What If series. We talked about the 2009 draft quite a bit with Jerry Zagoda a couple weeks ago, and had a couple of dedicated episodes related to that that whole debacle. So go back and listen to those if you missed them. But the season that started in 2009 and ran until 2010 was Kurt Rambis's first at the helm of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Of course, Rambis had long been an assistant for the Lakers, an associate head coach, and had been an interim head coach at one point for them, was handpicked by David Kahn to lead this Timberwolves team. This was just kind of setting the stage for the Wolves roster that year. On paper, it is pretty bad. But this was Al Jefferson's third and final year. He was recovering with the Timberwolves, I should say. He was recovering from an ACL tear that happened the previous season. Remember, Kevin McHale had took over the team the previous year after Randy Whitman was fired. And the Wolves had a promising stretch in January, February-ish of 2009. Then Al Jefferson tore his ACL. Randy Foy had been breaking out at the time. Then at the end of the season, McHale was dismissed. Once David Kahn was hired, Kahn hired Rambis. He actually traded Randy Foy along with Mike Miller on draft night for that extra pick in 2009. So Foy's gone. Jefferson's in his final year. He's recovering from his ACL tear, I believe, the previous January, maybe early February. So he made a pretty quick recovery, but was on a little bit of a minutes restriction early in the season. It ended up being his worst year in Minnesota from a statistical standpoint. That was partly due to the injury recovery, partly due to Kevin Love's emergence, although we'll get into Love here in just a second. But those are the two best players on the team are far and away Kevin Love and Al Jefferson, and it's not close. I mean, probably the next best player that saw regular minutes was Damian Wilkins, which, I mean, he was 30 at the time, and believe it or not, just played in the league a couple years ago with the Pacers. But like in terms of minutes getters on this team, Corey Brewer led the way and was not very good this year. This was his third year in the league. He was only 23. Al Jefferson was second in minutes. Johnny Flynn as a rookie was third. He was only 20 years old. Ryan Gomes fourth. Ramon Sessions, the backup point guard, fifth in minutes. Kevin Love was sixth. He started the year injured. He broke a bone in his hand, a knuckle in his hand preseason. And stop me if you've heard that before, but this is the first time that injury happened. And he missed the first 18 games of the year. The Wolves started 2-16 at the beginning of the season without Love. He came back and was mostly coming off the bench. He started 22 games in the middle of the season, but Rambis, for whatever reason, well, we'll get into that in a minute. But then Damian Wilkins was seventh in minutes, Wayne Ellington eighth, Ryan Hollins ninth, Sasha Pavlovich was number 10. And then after that, it was a bunch of guys who didn't play regularly. Although Darko Milicic was acquired during the season, and he ended up starting 18 games for this team. Alexei Pekarov also got some minutes late in the season. Nathan Jawai and Brian Cardinal. But your top 10, I mean, Brewer, Jefferson, Flynn, Ryan Gomes, Ramon Sessions, Love, Damian Wilkins, Wayne Ellington as a rookie, Ryan Hollins, and Sasha Pavlovich. Doesn't exactly strike fear in the hearts of opponents. And as it turns out, this team won only 15 games, was one of the worst teams in recent memory. In fact, we mentioned this the other day, or I guess now a couple weeks ago, but on the Hollinger and Duncan podcast, when they were talking about the worst teams in NBA history, or at least, sorry, I guess the last decade or so, this team was on that list, the 2009-2010 Timberwolves. And running down the list of their top 10 in the rotation, you can easily see why that's the case. Related to Kevin Love specifically, this is Love's second season. As a rookie, he started to play more and more as the season went on. Remember, Kevin McHale became the coach midseason. McHale and Love had a good relationship. In fact, the summer of 2009, Love broke the news on Twitter of McHale's firing because McHale told Love before it was public knowledge. And Love, as a 20-year-old, went public on Twitter and basically since then has been much more reclusive on social media, active, but not nearly as active as he was as a 20-year-old. But aren't we all? And coming into Love's second year, he broke his knuckle in preseason, missed the first 18 games, started coming off the bench, started for a stretch in the middle of the season. He ended up starting 22 of the 60 games he played in. And there was kind of this, I vividly remember there was a postseason back and forth between a reporter and Kurt Rambis, and I don't know who the reporter was. But the reporter asked why the best player on the team wasn't on the floor at the end of the game. Rambis asked who it was. The reporter said Love, and Rambis said, well, that's your opinion that he's the best player on the team. And it was that sort of attitude from Rambis that was a big part of why this team was never going to be successful with him as head coach. For some reason, he was too stubborn to believe that he could have been wrong who the best player on the team was. And Love was not featured in any way on this team as a second year player and played a lot of minutes next to Al Jefferson. I don't think he really played any minutes at center at this point in his career. So he played a lot next to Al Jefferson, but late in the season, he was coming off the bench in favor of Ryan Hollins. In some cases, in favor of Alexei Pekarov was getting some minutes at the four. And Kevin Love was playing there were a couple games. He got 12, 15 minutes a game. And we'll get into some of the game logs and some of the key box scores or box scores that stuck out to me looking back at the season here in a minute. But Love still finished the season as the best per 48 minute rebounder in the league, which I don't typically love the per 48 or per 36 numbers because nobody ever plays exactly those number of minutes. And so many times it overinflates guys who, you know, might be a really good role player, but they're great in that role. And if they get overextended, those numbers don't look so sexy. But Love, obviously, starting the next year, was an all-star and became the best rebounder in the league for a long period of time. As a second-year player with limited playing time and a terrible system run by a bad coach, was still the best per 48 rebounder in the league, again, as a 20-year-old, or 21-year-old, I guess, by the time the season started. So for the season, he averaged 14 and 11, shot 45% from the floor, shot just under two threes a game at 33%. He was actually the second leading scorer in terms of points per game on this team. Al Jefferson, of course, led the way, but only averaged 17.1 points and 9.3 rebounds. Your third scorer on this team, Johnny Flynn, 13.5 points a game, 4.4 assists, actually was not bad as a rookie. He was okay. And then as a second year player is when some of the injuries started to really crop up. And, Flynn, he shot almost 36% from the field, 36% from three, just under 42% from the field overall. There were certainly defensive issues and turnover issues and some of those things, but Flynn certainly had some promise. And we talked on a previous episode, and actually with Jerry Zagoda as well, a couple of weeks ago, that there was real opportunity for the Wolves to trade Johnny Flynn for the pick to get Paul George. That obviously ended up not happening, but there were a lot of different, you know, possibilities with this team. And unfortunately, the lack of playing time for Kevin Love, some of the lack of imagination with the offense and Kurt Rambis's rigidity and what he wanted to do in relation to the triangle really held this team below even what they should have been able to do. I mean, this is not a good roster, but they shouldn't have only won 15 games, even at the same time. So we'll get into a couple of specific games during the season, some interesting and in some cases laughable box scores here in just a moment. That's coming up next. All right, I want to wrap up talking about 2010 by highlighting a couple of interesting box scores. I had forgotten that this was opening night, but I knew that Damian Wilkins had hit a buzzer beater for the Timberwolves this year. It was opening night, October 28th, a home game against the Nets, who, of course, this year's New Jersey Nets went on to go 12-70, so they were somehow worse than the 15-win Timberwolves. And this was the team that Lawrence Frank was the coach. They started 0-16. He was fired. They went to Tom Barese for two games, and then they finished with Kiki Vandeweghe on the bench. But anyways, they ended up winning 12 games. This was the battle of two of the worst teams in recent memory. And the Timberwolves won this game at the buzzer. Johnny Flynn missed a mid-range jumper with about 3 seconds left. Damian Wilkins got the rebound and made a putback at the buzzer. I remember the Kurt Rambis fist pump, the probably almost sold-out Target Center with the optimism that David Kahn had been selling on opening night, and the Wolves started 1-0. And then they promptly went out, lost their next 15 games in a row, beat the Nuggets, lost another couple games. Love came back on December 4th at the New Orleans Hornets. The game at the Hornets was, of course, the Hornets at the time still had Chris Paul and was the New Orleans Hornets at the time. Johnny Flynn, one of the common comparisons, which was certainly unfair, that was floating around at the time, was Johnny Flynn and Chris Paul as a comparison. Chris Paul easily won this matchup, not surprisingly, had 16, 15 assists and 8 steals in this game against the Timberwolves. Johnny Flynn had 6 points, 4 assists, couple of turnovers, and the Wolves were led in a loss by Al Jefferson with 20-14. This was also Kevin Love's first game back after the Wolves started 2-16. Love came back from the broken bone in his hand, played 24 minutes off the bench, so pretty decent number of minutes played off the bench, had 11-11, 3 assists, 2 steals, shot 2-3 from beyond the arc, was a +5 off the bench in a game that the Wolves ultimately lost by 9. So made a splash in his return. The next game was the Wolves' third win of the season. So they were 2-17 coming into this game against the Utah Jazz. The Jazz ended up being a pretty good team this year. This is a Utah Jazz team that was still coached by Jerry Sloan. They ended up winning 53 games and made it to the second round of the playoffs. Still, this was Deron Williams still in Utah shortly before he forced his way out. Deron Williams, Carlos Boozer were the best players in this team. Wes Matthews, Mehmet Okur, Paul Millsap coming off the bench, CJ Miles coming off the bench. The Wolves won this game by 7 at Target Center, 108-101. The Wolves got 23 points from Ryan Gomes, led the team in scoring. Jefferson only had 15-11. Johnny Flynn had 16 points, 3 assists, 7-12 shooting. Kevin Love off the bench again, 26 minutes, 18 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, an assist, and a block. 2-3 again from beyond the arc, 6-9 from the field. So showing early on, and I don't remember him shooting this many threes this early in his career. This is, of course, the start of his second season. But the Wolves won this game, and Love, you know, 11-11 in his first game back off the bench. Second game back, 18-10, again off the bench. Just a really impressive showing for just a really bad team. So at the time, the team is 3-17, and then they go through a stretch where they lose several more in a row. There's a couple more long losing streaks. And by the time you get to late January, this team is 9-38. They did end up winning 4 games in a row at one point in late January. And for the most part, not beating very good teams. They did beat the Clippers, who are pretty average this year. They were relying on old Baron Davis and, the Rhino Craig Smith coming off the bench, Ricky Davis coming off the bench. DeAndre Jordan had a bit role on this team. Marcus Camby was in the starting lineup. Eric Gordon, just kind of a weird Clippers team. Certainly before, this is pre-Doc Rivers, a Clippers team that went on by the end of the season to finish 29-53. So I guess they were a little worse than I had remembered initially. They kind of tanked it at the end of the year, apparently. But Corey Brewer led the way in this game, scored 20 points. Jefferson had 14 and 16. Love again off the bench in 24 minutes, 13 and 13. That was the start of a four-game winning streak. The following game, they beat the Knicks, who, again, were not good this year. The Wolves got 22 and 11 from Jefferson, 25, 11, and 4 from Kevin Love. He actually played 32 minutes in this game and, of course, always killed the Knicks. And then they beat the Mavericks, who were a good playoff team this season. And that was the third win in a row. 19 points from Johnny Flynn, 7 assists from Johnny Flynn, 15 and 8 from Al Jefferson, 17 and 11 from Love off the bench. And then their fourth win in a row came against the Memphis Grizzlies, who were decent this year. The Grizzlies ended up winning 40 games and just missing the playoffs. This is just prior to the breakout of the grit and grind era. And the Timberwolves got 23 and 7 from Jefferson, 26 from Ryan Gomes, 19 and 6 from Ramon Sessions, only 12 and 7 from Love in this one. And then after this, the Wolves went right back to their losing ways, lost 6 in a row. And then after a win, lost 16 in a row. So they had battled their record back to 13 and 38, which isn't exactly good. But then they went out and lost, what's 16 plus 6? 22. So they lost 22 of their next 23 games. And then to close the season, they lost another 7 in a row. So things were brutal from that record of 13 and 38 to 15 and 67, meaning that they went 2 and 29 over their last 31 games of the season. And that was when the Love's minutes went back down just a little bit, and Pekrov's minutes went up just a little bit. And I wonder why that was exactly. But this team finished with just 15 wins, went into the NBA draft as, of course, the league's second worst team next to the Brooklyn Nets, who won just 12 games. But, of course, as we all know, the Timberwolves did not advance in the lottery. They instead dropped. This was back when the lottery odds were, there wasn't like a tiered system like there is now, where the worst three teams all get a 14% chance. The Wolves had the second greatest odds at the number one pick. They slid to number four. The question was, do you draft Wes Johnson? Do you draft DeMarcus Cousins? The Wolves went with Wes Johnson. Also at the top of this draft, this was the John Wall draft. And there was some thought, do the Wolves then trade up to get either Derek Favors or Evan Turner? They ended up standing pat, taking Johnson over Cousins. They traded their 16th pick in the draft for Martell Webster. That pick ended up being Luke Babbitt, and Webster was decent in Minnesota, but injuries followed him around everywhere, of course. The Wolves later in the draft traded Trevor Booker and a second round pick and ended up getting the rights to Nemanja Bjelica, who came over a couple years later. And that actually ended up being a pretty good move. Booker was a good pro, but Bjelica fit what the Wolves were trying to do more. And even though it took him, he didn't come over till after David Kahn was gone. But this was that ended up being a decent move. The trading of the 16th pick wasn't awful either. Unfortunately, drafting Johnson and not drafting Cousins and choosing to not trade up ended up not working out. This was the draft where they could have gotten the number 10 pick to get Paul George if they had traded Johnny Flynn. And as Jerry Zagoda said a couple weeks ago, that's something that he thought the Wolves were going to do. The Wolves were obviously very interested in Paul George, but Khan just decided he didn't want to give up on Johnny Flynn that early. So that was kind of the rest of 2010. The following year, which I guess technically still was 2010, the Wolves improved from 15 wins to 17 wins under Kurt Rambis. And that was it for Kurt Rambis as an NBA head coach. He went, took a couple years off, went to the Lakers as an assistant, went to the Knicks as an assistant, was their interim head coach for the end of one season, and then was fired a couple years ago, and Jeff Hornacek was fired. So to my knowledge, he doesn't have an NBA job right now, at least not officially. But this was Kurt Rambis's chance. He went from 15 to 17 wins. The roster, of course, didn't change drastically from the 09-10 season to the 2010-2011 season. Very much a similar roster. Kevin Love, of course, was still the best player on the team. They did trade Al Jefferson in the offseason and got a first-round pick in Kostas Koufos in return. They also picked up Michael Beasley, Luke Ridnour in free agent, or they traded for Michael Beasley, tried to get lightning in a bottle there, and it worked out with fairly moderately successful results. Picked up Luke Ridnour in free agency, Wes Johnson obviously was drafted. Darko Milicic had a larger role. Corey Brewer was still a big part of this team. Wayne Ellington in his second year. Johnny Flynn struggled through injuries. This was Nikola Pekovic's first year after coming over. He'd been a Kevin McHale draft pick, but didn't come over until this year, and he started to break out in season. There was the tease of Anthony Randolph being a potential something. I guess there was a little more roster turnover than I remembered, but as it turns out, the team didn't get any better. So Rambis, you know, given a couple of different rosters and was unable to do anything more with it. Of course, then after that, Rick Adelman came on board for the lockout season and things started to turn around a little bit for this team. Also, Ricky Rubio came over. Not that Rubio would have fit terribly well in the triangle, but to be fair to Rambis, Flynn was hurt. He never got to have Rubio, and Conn drafted both those guys ahead of Steph Curry. So there certainly were a lot of things that went on wrong, not just Kurt Rambis. However, the coaching job in the year 2010 was one of the worst in Minnesota Timberwolves history, and that is not an overstatement. All right, that wraps up this discussion. Next week, it'll get a little happier. We're going to talk 1995 early next week. Of course, 95 was the year when one Kevin Garnett was drafted by Flip Saunders and Kevin McHale. So we'll talk all things 1995 Minnesota Timberwolves next week. That's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. If you do listen on iTunes, especially on iTunes, go ahead and leave us a review on there. That definitely helps us out, helps us rank and get listened to a little bit more often. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Wolves. A final special thanks to our friends at Built Bar for bringing us today's episode. Visit BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your first order. Now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On NBA. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.